Thank you very much, Sonia. Let us now take a closer look at how, in reality, the world is dealing with this pandemic, which is without any basis. I would like to first focus on those who claim that, well, but there, many people are dying. People are dying in Bergamo. People are dying in New York. So let us start with taking first a look at why that happened, and then we will take a closer look at how else, how can it be treated? I mean, we all know there is a virus out there, but how can it be treated? Let's first take a look at the question, why is this happening? And Brian Artis is with us, Dr. Brian Artis from Texas. How do you explain the fact that so many people seem to have died in New York, for example, of the corona or from the coronavirus?
Yeah, it's a great question. From the beginning of May 2020, I had that same question because in March and April of 2020, there was nonstop reports in the media from doctors, hospital administrators in New York City who were complaining and relating the same scenario. Every time they were asked by the media, what are you seeing in patients you're treating with COVID-19 in hospitals here in New York? They all said the same thing, all of them. We have never seen a respiratory virus ever do this before. From the time we start treating this respiratory virus, by day 3, 4, and 5 of treatment, the virus goes from the lungs and then it starts attacking the kidneys and causing severe acute kidney failure that we've never seen before. And they kept saying, we're not only short on ventilators here in New York, we're also short on dialysis machines. So this was very intriguing to me. I actually had a similar scenario just 3 months earlier from May of 2020 when I was watching all these reports in the media. My own father-in-law had died in a hospital from ill-advised protocols in early February of 2020, and I and my wife received a phone call on day 3 of his treatment for the flu that he was going into acute kidney failure, only to find out it was a drug he was put on, ill-advised for the flu, that actually was known to cause acute kidney failure. Unrelated to COVID, 3 months later, I'm reading this May memo from Anthony Fauci of the NIH because I'm curious, why is it that all these doctors, nurses, hospital administrators in New York keep reporting the same thing I experienced? Day 3, 4, and 5 of treatment for a supposed virus in New York called COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, they were seeing high amounts of acute kidney failure. So I went to the CDC.gov's website. They did not have a protocol for treating COVID-19 hospitalized patients, but they referred back to the NIH's protocol for COVID-19. And on that actual memo, I hyperlinked it to the NIH.gov. This is where Anthony Fauci had a memo for the entire world. This was in the middle of May 2020. And he said, there is only one drug and one drug only that we're authorizing to be used in all hospitals across America for COVID-19 hospitalized Americans. That one experimental antiviral drug is called remdesivir. There's 2 studies supporting its use. It was found safe and effective against the Ebola virus a year prior in Africa. Then he said it was found safe and effective in a trial in March of 2020, just 2 months earlier, which was conducted by the maker of remdesivir called Gilead Sciences. He then went on in the same memo to declare that there is 2 drugs that were not allowed to be used because they found it had heart toxic effects leading to death in COVID-19 treated patients. And those 2 drugs were hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine. Now, I was not of interest of hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine at the time. I was most interested in this remdesivir drug because I had never heard of it. I also learned here that it was just an experimental drug. At this point, it was never FDA approved. So my curiosity was, I wanted to know what Dr. Anthony Fauci was proclaiming on NIH.gov was his reasonings for choosing this one and only drug. So I clicked the first hyperlinked study to the New England Journal of Medicine on Ebola, and then actually read the second study also. And Dr. Rainier, you understand this because we've done this interview before. I couldn't believe what I found out. So what I then learned was that remdesivir was not proven safe and effective against the Ebola virus. In fact, it was found to be the least effective and the deadliest drug in the trial. And the safety board for that trial suspended its use for the rest of the trial, and no one was allowed to get it because it had the only drug published in the trial of 4 drugs two have a percentage of death rate called mortality rate of over 50%. The other three drugs didn't have over a 50% mortality rate. Only remdesivir did. That's why the safety board pulled it. So this is the kind of information that I knew then Anthony Fauci was lying about this drug. The second study conducted by Gilead Sciences, they gave the drug remdesivir for 10 days to COVID-19 patients, 53 of them in March of 2020. Their reported conclusions were 31% of everyone they gave that drug to between days 5 and 10 of the treatment, and it was only for 10 days. They found 31% of everybody that got that drug who had COVID-19 positive, they actually experienced multiple organ failure, reported acute kidney failure, which is what all the media was reporting. And I knew right away that the doctors were being very honest in their reporting that they have never seen a respiratory virus in New York City. When they start treating this COVID-19 patients, they had never seen such amounts of acute kidney failure. And that's because they had never used the drug remdesivir before. They had no idea the drug they were pumping into them was causing acute kidney failure, liver failure, and heart failure, which are all now published side effects of remdesivir. The disappointing part of this for the entire world, I want you to know, Anthony Fauci said in May of 2020, he asked our federal government here in the United States to buy up all of the stock of this experimental drug, this failed drug, deadly drug. And he asked the federal government of the United States to export the drug to any other country until the end of 2020. This is significant because at the end of 2020 and now in February of 2022, America still has the highest death totals of all countries in the entire world for COVID-19 treatment. So all COVID-19 citizens in America, no other country has more deaths than we do. And I attribute it to the hospital protocols initiated early on by Dr. Anthony Fauci. And if you would let me present it, I'll show you all the evidence that supports my concern around this drug. Because right now, not only does the United States of America is the only country with over 900,000 dead COVID-19 citizens, Brazil's number two. And Brazil has over 630,000. And Brazil, since the beginning of March of 2021, is only using remdesivir in all of its hospitals. The correlation in publicized death side effects and deadly side effects of remdesivir, in my opinion, based on the data I can show you all, is that the hospital protocols, which includes remdesivir, and now 2 years later, its published combined side effects is the number one cause of death of all COVID-19 hospitalized individuals worldwide. Now, it's come to light also, and everyone needs to know this. From the beginning, I've heard the term, even from the judge, that this is a pandemic. From the beginning, not only in March and April of 2020, was the city of New York allowed to experiment on all New York patients with a drug called remdesivir to kill a whole bunch of them, causing acute kidney failure, secondary death by pulmonary edema, which is what happens when you cause acute kidney failure. Across the Atlantic Ocean in the UK, there's an organization called NICE, N-I-C-E, along with the UK Parliament, the MHRA. They all were supportive of what was called end-of-life care. And they put in this protocol to take in morphine and midazolam into the nursing homes of individuals all around the UK. And in March of 2020, they administered this drug in nursing homes and killed 18,000 people in March of 2020, 25,000 in April of 2020, but they called them all COVID-19 deaths. I believe remdesivir here in the United States, along with midazolam and morphine protocols called end-of-life care inside the UK, which everyone here should refer to, Claire Wills Harrison, she's an attorney out of the UK, has done a great job putting this together. John O'Looney's on this testifying group here. He can testify as a funeral director. The amount of deaths that were starting in March and April of 2020 only designated as COVID-19, even when none of these people had COVID-19 in March and April 2020 in the UK. I believe there was a huge setup to mass murder a whole bunch of people using drugs and drug protocols that were governed, selected by federal health agencies and our governments to initiate a huge amount of death and then project on the world that there's a virus killing all these people. And I said from the beginning in May of 2020, they're going to use these death totals in hospitals and in nursing centers. They're going to call it death by a virus called COVID-19. They're going to take those numbers and they're going to sell the media in all of the societies of America and the UK that there's a deadly virus going around the world. And you need to sign up for our future vaccine program coming up, which we'll get into later in this trial. The vaccines by far was the end agenda. They had to mass murder a lot of people and convince them it was a deadly virus. Would you like me to present the evidence? So Anthony Fauci declared that in May of 2020, that there was an Ebola trial in which remdesivir was found to be safe and effective against the Ebola virus. Did it? This is the actual trial, still lives on the New England Journal of Medicine. You can see on the right-hand side of the page, it was published December 12th, 2019. This study started in November of 2018. And this is what they did. They took four experimental drugs. All patients were given, you'll see the three names, ZMAP, which was a triple monoclonal antibody. You see an antiviral agent called remdesivir, a single monoclonal antibody called MAB114, and then a triple monoclonal antibody that the world knows about right now called Regeneron, abbreviated REGN-EB3. This was the actual study. We're going to go into four regions of Africa, and we're going to give four different drugs to Ebola patients. The conclusions, right off the bat, when you look at any study, they'll give you a summary, and then they'll show you the conclusions. This is very nefarious, and everyone needs to see this. Right off the bat, if you go on there right now, the conclusions were that both MAB114 and Regeneron were superior to ZMAP in reducing mortality from EBD, period. Now, I want to bring your attention to this. This is published on New England Journal of Medicine. Notice in the conclusion, they only list three drugs, but in the study, there were four drugs. It says both MAB and Regeneron were superior to ZMAP in reducing mortality from EBD. But they said there was four drugs in the study. Interesting, right? They didn't actually mention remdesivir. Well, let's find out why they didn't want to show this on the conclusions at the top of the study. All right, so just to bring everyone's attention here, if you look down in the parentheses here underneath conclusions, you'll see it's funded by the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. That's who funded this entire study on Ebola in Africa for the year 2018 to 19. Now, who's the head of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease? I just want to make sure for the world that it's on record. You can see the director of the NIH, NIAID department that funded the Ebola trial is Dr. Anthony Fauci. First statement is, Dr. Anthony Fauci was appointed director since 1984. So he would have been the same director during this 2018 to 19 study. How did they screen these people for Ebola? You just listen to Dr. Sonia. Now, all the patients in the Ebola trial, they used the PCR test to determine if they had Ebola. Disgustingly, they actually allowed pregnant women using the PCR test to designate positive results for Ebola. They allowed pregnant women. Look at the last sentence highlighted. Even neonates 7 days of age or younger were included in this experimental drug trial in Africa if the mother had documented positive Ebola. I find that pretty disgusting that an experimental drug trial you're going to put in 7-day-old and younger kids without symptoms. It just says if the mother tested positive. All right, now in the mortality section of this study on Ebola in Africa. On August 9, 2019, when 681 patients had been enrolled, the Data and Safety Monitoring Board conducted an interim analysis on data from 499 patients. And on the basis of two observations, in August of 2019, they recommended terminating random assignment to ZMAP and remdesivir. So the safety board saw two problems with ZMAP and remdesivir and terminated its use to be continued in this trial. Well, what was so disturbing? This is table two from that actual study. To get the group's eyes here and the audience's eyes here and the jury, table two. Read the title, comparison of death at days 28 according to treatment group. You have the population column on the left. Then you'll have four drugs listed, ZMAP, remdesivir, MAB114, Regeneron is REGN-EB3. The first statistic listed under each one of those is for mortality rate. What is the percentage of people given that drug in this trial that died? ZMAP had a 49.7% death rate. You'll see it in parentheses just below ZMAP there in the highlighted area titled overall. So ZMAP, everyone that got the drug, 49.7% of them died. Remdesivir, at a death percentage of 53.1%. MAB114, 35.1% of everyone died. Regeneron, 33.5%. Based on this information, the safety board saw that remdesivir had the highest mortality rate and was the least effective in the trial, and then decided to pull remdesivir and ZMapp from the trial. Now, for the jury, I would just like to present this to the jury. If you were Anthony Fauci and you had this one study that you funded and you were going to be selecting one drug and one drug only to be the only drug pumped into all innocent American citizens with COVID-19, would any of you knowing what the safety board knew when they pulled remdesivir, seeing it was the only drug that had a death rate of 53.1% or higher, which of these four drugs would you have chosen? And then I'd like you to ask yourself, why would Anthony Fauci have selected remdesivir when the safety board had its own concerns? Which one would you have picked if these were the only four drugs you had in the entire world to pick from? I would like to hope and think that you, as a healthcare administrator or overseeing a department for the entire country, would make a decision to pick one with the least mortality rate, like Regeneron in this case. Just to bring your attention here, this is at the end of the study, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and then it lists the authors by abbreviation who actually contributed to the study. So after I saw this Ebola trial study, I knew Anthony Fauci was flat out lying. It was not proven safe and effective against the Ebola virus. That's what he said it did. Then I wanted to know, well, what did they find in the Gilead study? The Gilead study was done in March of 2020. You'll see it was published in June 11th. This was their own studies. This was done from January, just so you know, the Ebola trial published December of 2019. In that trial, remdesivir was pulled and found to be the least effective and the most deadly. Just a month later, January of 2020, Gilead is given the opportunity to do this study with remdesivir on COVID-19 patients. Now, the Ebola trial was 28 days of drugging for those drugs per patient. And they found more people died from remdesivir than any other drug. In this trial, in January of 2020, Gilead did something smart. They said, we're only going to give 10 days of this drug to COVID-19 patients. Why? Because 28 days worth killed the most people in the trial that just finished a month earlier. This is the published findings of Gilead from their 10 days of remdesivir poisoning in COVID-19 patients. 23% had serious adverse events between days 5 and 10. The most common serious adverse events, multiple organ failure, septic shock, acute kidney injury, and hypotension. Another 8% below there discontinued remdesivir treatment prematurely. They couldn't even make it the full days. One because of worsening pre-existing renal failure, one because of multiple organ failure, and two needed to have kidney transplants as a result of the drug killing their kidneys. Now, what was that being reported in the actual news? All I kept hearing was, we've never seen a virus cause acute kidney injury, when in fact 31% of the people who got remdesivir for 10 days were actually experiencing and reporting acute kidney failure from the Gilead trial just 2 months earlier. So at the same time that 10 days of remdesivir was getting pumped into the Gilead patients, 53 COVID-19 patients, there was a study at the exact same time in France, except France took remdesivir in January to March of 2020. They only gave it to five COVID-19 positive patients, including one from Wuhan. And they gave the drug for 14 days. This is in the beginning of 2020. What did they find? This is what they did. So from, just want to show the dates, January 24th till March 1st, they were diagnosed with COVID-19 and treated with remdesivir from Gilead. This is who was enrolled. They're in Paris, France. What did they find? They actually had set up a 14-day duration of treatment with remdesivir. Highlighted part on the screen from the study, remdesivir was interrupted before the initial planned duration in four out of the five patients. Two, because of alanine aminotransferase elevations, which is increased liver toxicity enzymes in the blood work, abbreviated ALT on most blood panels. They said this number, liver toxicity, was 3 to 5 times the normal range within those 14 days. So they pulled those two patients off the drug early and then continue. And two, because of renal failure requiring renal replacement. Now, for the jury, renal means kidneys. So two of the four who came off had to be taken off because their kidneys died requiring renal replacement. Before they were administered remdesivir, liver function and kidney function was tested, and they evaluated them every day as they received these drugs. 4 out of the 5 patients had to come off early. 2 of the 5 had to have kidney transplants as a result. Only 1 lived through the whole 14 days. 2 out of the 5 died as a result of the treatment of remdesivir. There's a reason why France doesn't have the death totals that we do. Now, that was conducted in and finalized in March of 2020. Fast forward to November of 2020. Remdesivir, proclaimed by the World Health Organization, they determine and proclaim, read the highlighted part, the antiviral remdesivir should not be used as treatment for hospitalized COVID-19 patients. The World Health Organization said Thursday, only a month after the Food and Drug Administration approved the drug to treat patients over age 12 who are hospitalized. October 22nd, 2020 was the date in which the FDA in America approved remdesivir as an FDA-approved drug to treat COVID-19 patients. And the World Health Organization, just the next month, you'll see the date on there, November 19th, said, we do not recommend this based on all the data we've seen. Gilead reported in this information and data collection by the World Health Organization, Gilead even stated remdesivir has potential side effects on the kidneys that they reported to European Medicines Agency. This is November of 2020. For the jury and for the judge, I would like to present some information that's come probably the most disturbing out of this entire 2 years of studying these hospital protocols. This is published in Nature Medicine, July 10th, 2020. I want you to read the beginning part of this abstract. This is 2 months after Anthony Fauci gets Gilead, the maker of remdesivir, to be the only company, pharmaceutical company, awarded the only contract for the only drug to treat all COVID-19 hospitalized patients in the entire country of America. This summary here is titled, the title of this study is Extrapulmonary Manifestations of COVID-19. This means other than the lungs, what the virus does to the body and causing disease of other organs. Let's read the actual first sentence here. COVID-19 is most well known for causing substantial respiratory pathology or disease. It can also result in several extrapulmonary manifestations or disease processes outside the lungs. These conditions include thrombotic complications. That's blood clotting disorders, myocardial dysfunction, heart disease, and arrhythmia. Acute coronary syndrome, which is strokes, heart attacks, acute kidney injury, GI symptoms, and hepatocellular injury. Hepatocellular means liver toxicity. Now, when I got this actual article, remember, this is 2 months after Gilead Sciences is allowed to be the only drug manufacturer to provide a solution to all hospitalized patients for COVID-19. When I read this, I already knew that that the virus itself was not the primary cause of acute kidney injury. It was actually remdesivir and the liver toxicity, as mentioned here. But in Nature Medicine, July of 2020, there's this publication made for the whole world to be able to see this new novel virus is causing these issues in the body as doctors are treating it, so you know it's actually the virus and nothing else. All right, so here's what was reported in this study. In China, the reported incidence of acute kidney injury in hospital patients with COVID ranged from 0.5% to 29%. And it occurred with an average period of time within 7 to 14 days after being admitted in the hospital. So between weeks 1 and 2 of treatment is when acute kidney injury occurred. But studies from the USA have reported much higher rates of acute kidney injury in a study of nearly 5,500 patients admitted with COVID-19 in a New York City hospital system. Acute kidney injury occurred in 37%, with 14% of the patients requiring dialysis. Remember, they all said, we don't have enough dialysis machines here. And then read this, about 1/3 were diagnosed with acute kidney injury within 24 hours of admission in the study. The only drug being used in that study in New York City hospital systems in March and April of 2020 was remdesivir. That's the only thing different between what China was doing and what we were doing. I could not believe it. In the ethics declaration of this Nature Medicine publication about what the virus does for the entire world as doctors are treating them around the world, we want you to recognize the virus of SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, causes all these problems in other organs in the body. Inside the ethics declarations, where you actually have to list those who are contributing to the data in the study, you have to disclose, do you maybe have a conflict of interest in being allowed to participate in contributing data. I put on the screen for the jury a woman named Joan, JMB reports an honorarium for participation on a grants review panel for Gilead Biosciences. Why would someone on the payroll of Gilead be allowed to contribute when they're the only pharmaceutical company supplying the only drug to all COVID-19 hospitalized patients? Why would anyone on their payroll be allowed to contribute to designate and define what's the side effects of the virus you're treating when, in fact, I'll show you? This is actually all the side effects. All of these here, these side effects that are listed here are actually side effects of remdesivir poisoning. And we can prove it. All right, so remdesivir, this is April 2021. There's actually a World Health Safety Database review. What they want to compare is around the world, which includes this audience, around the world, there are four major drugs being used to treat all COVID-19 patients. This is April 2021. They want to see if it's true that the virus causing COVID-19 is causing acute kidney injury in the majority of all people, and this is a side effect of the virus. We're going to look at the World Health Organization's database, and we're going to see, we're going to look at and compare four drugs treating COVID-19 patients worldwide: remdesivir, hydroxychloroquine, lopinavir, and a drug that's a monoclonal antibody called tocilizumab. And this is what they found. So this is the setup. Read the highlighted part. Reporting odds ratio compared the number of acute renal failure cases reported with remdesivir with those reported with other drugs prescribed in comparable situations of COVID-19. This is important. The most important part of this entire thing is they were prescribed these four drugs in comparable situations of COVID-19. Per the Nature Medicine publication, they said the virus causes acute kidney injury. They're going to compare and see, is it true that all these COVID-19 positive patients around the world are all developing acute kidney failure on an even scale? And we're going to look at all these patients being treated with four different drugs: hydroxychloroquine in parentheses, tocilizumab, and lopinavir. Well, what did they find? First sentence only. Reporting odds ratio of acute renal failure with remdesivir was 20-fold that of comparative drugs. 20-fold. Not even close. Remdesivir is known to cause acute kidney failure. Absolutely. Now, come full circle now to October of 2021, just 5 months later after April, and there's a journal called the Cardiovascular Toxicology Journal titled Potential Cardiotoxic Effects of Remdesivir on Cardiovascular System. Read at the bottom. Remdesivir can also induce significant cytotoxic or cell toxic effects in cardiomyocytes, heart cells, that is considerably worse than chloroquine cardiotoxic effects. Remdesivir-induced toxicity is due to its binding of mitochondria and the RNA polymerase. I need to reread this. In May of 2020, Anthony Fauci said, you cannot use chloroquine, you cannot use hydroxychloroquine with these COVID-19 patients because chloroquine was found to cause heart disease and death in COVID-19-treated patients. So we're only going to use remdesivir. In October 2021, you can see the date at the top. The journal is to the left, Cardiovascular Toxicology. First sentence, remdesivir, in the highlighted part. Remdesivir can also induce significant cytotoxic effects in cardiomyocytes that is considerably worse than chloroquine cardiotoxic effects. This is a study from 2020 early on that Anthony Fauci would quote saying chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine increase the risk of death in COVID-19 patients. And they said in this study, all four regimens were also independently associated with an increased risk of new onset ventricular tachycardia or fibrillation. So this study, they found there's toxic heart effects due to chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine that's increasing, read the title, the risk of death of COVID-19. However, the Cardiovascular Toxicology Journal just a few months ago, remdesivir far worse causes cardiotoxic effects as compared to chloroquine, as these studies proclaimed. All right, what are some of the other published cardiotoxic effects? If you start here, there in the highlighted part, there are some reports of sinus bradycardia, hypotension, T-wave abnormalities, atrial fibrillation, which is arrhythmic issues. Remember, Nature Medicine said arrhythmias are the side effect of the virus. It's actually a known published side effect of the one and only drug getting pumped into your veins, and a prolonged QT interval, which is creating this lethargy and fatigue that everybody's experiencing. and few cases of cardiac arrest and complete heart block following remdesivir infusion. Why is this significant? In 2005, Anthony Fauci knew that chloroquine was found to be a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus, SARS-CoV-1, back in 2005. Why weren't we publishing this? The conclusion of this study in 2005, chloroquine, a relatively safe and effective and cheap drug used for treating many human diseases, including malaria, amoebiosis, and human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, is effective in inhibiting the infection and spread of SARS-CoV-1 in cell culture. We've known that for 15 years at this point. This is important. The NIH has just updated these charts. This is actually titled Table 2E on NIH.gov. Last updated July 8th, 2021. You'll notice remdesivir is listed here. You'll see adverse events as a second column. I want you, everyone's eyes to go to the fifth bullet point under adverse events for remdesivir. It actually states that the drug vehicle is abbreviated SBECD, which has been associated with renal and liver toxicity. So we know it's even published as a known side effect of the drug. On this chart dated July 8, 2021, it was a broad titled characteristics, read the title, characteristics of antiviral agents that are approved or under evaluation for the treatment of COVID-19. On this chart, there was three drugs listed as either approved or under evaluation by the NIH. The second drug on that list was ivermectin. It gives you your doses of what to use in hospitalized patients. Very first bullet point in the second column under adverse events or side effects, generally well tolerated. Now, I want to bring everyone's attention to this because they updated this chart in December. And they call it now Table 2F. Look at the date, last updated December 16th, 2021, right underneath the title. They list remdesivir. They also list remdesivir as the only FDA-approved drug now on this list. But I want to bring your attention to ivermectin. You'll see ivermectin right underneath there. It says it's not approved by the FDA and not recommended by the panel. And I want you to notice what they deleted underneath side effects of ivermectin. I've been pointing this out to legislators around the country and around the world. They deleted the first one that said generally well tolerated. It's the only one they removed for reference. Check this out. Ivermectin, first bullet point, generally well tolerated. Now here, they removed it. They don't want you to see it. They don't want you to know it's generally well tolerated. All right. So I do want you to know there's like six or seven drugs on this chart now in the NIH. The actual drug remdesivir is the only one now titled in December of 2021 and still now. Is the only FDA-approved drug to treat remdesivir. After it's been published that it causes liver failure, acute kidney failure, and now heart failure that we know, and heart defects. Disgustingly, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services here in the United States, Medicare covers all the elderly, Medicaid's the impoverished and the disabled, but Medicare right now is actually offering, you'll see the title, new COVID-19 treatments add-on payments per the CARES Act. This should disgust everybody in the jury. If it's true that remdesivir causes acute kidney failure, liver failure, and heart failure, it should disgust everyone to find out that CMS for Medicare is bribing all hospitals with a 20% bonus payout if they'll just use remdesivir. And that bonus payout goes for the entire bill for a COVID-19 treated patients. You'll read here in the highlighted part, NCTAP claims are those that are eligible for the 20% add-on bonus payment. Under the section 3710 of the CARES Act, there's two things they're giving 20% bonuses for to all hospitals in America. For only Medicare-aged patients that's 65 years and older, two bullet points. ICD-10 CM diagnosis code of U07.1, that's COVID-19 positive. That's the diagnosis code they get a 20% bonus payout for. The second bullet point are ICD-10 PCS codes for remdesivir. And then below there, you'll see the chart, and they actually tell the hospitals, if you'll just put down these two codes, those first two codes on the chart, we'll give you a 20% add-on bonus if you just pick remdesivir, a drug known to be toxic and deadly, proven to be so. Now, I want to bring your attention to this. Why is Medicare continuing to bribe hospitals? Why? When in fact, look at this chart, look at the date, top right. This is on c19early.com. This is today, February 13th, 2022. I want you to notice this is the all mortality results. They take research studies from around the world being used to treat hospitalized COVID-19 patients, and they want to know what of those drugs is producing the greatest rates of improvement and survivability. I want you to look at this chart. This is just as of this morning. Look at the bottom of the chart. That's where remdesivir sits. The second column is the improvement section. The percentages of all people in the research studies that are seeing improvements and not dying. Remdesivir is at 19% improvement. And look at the amount of studies and the amount of patients in those studies, and then look at the cost of that failing drug. It's over $3,100 per treatment, which is a five-day treatment period. Almost everything above there has better results than remdesivir. And this is worldwide studies. My question is, why are we still supporting a drug 2 years later that is obviously failing worse than 30 plus other products you can see here listed, which includes nutrients? You'll see ivermectin on here at 54% success rate by itself. That's easily double remdesivir's effectiveness at mortality and improving mortality outcomes. Quercetin, you'll see povidone iodines at 72%, and that's a nasal wash and throat gargle that costs a dollar. Why are we promoting remdesivir? It's the most expensive drug on this entire list, and it's one of the most failed. The FDA has just updated, as of January 24th, just a few weeks ago, they updated that because of Omicron variant, we are now discontinuing to allow Regeneron to be used in all clinics around the country, all states, all territories, all jurisdictions. And they actually claim that Omicron is not found to react to the treatments from those monoclonal antibodies that have been being used. And because of this data, they're now suspending its use. I'm just showing you these things. There's only, they list here in the highlighted part, importantly, there are several other therapies, Paxlovid, Sotrovimab, Remdesivir, which is called Veklury, and Molnupiravir, which is a Merck drug, that are expected to work against the Omicron variant. These are the only ones that are authorized or approved to treat patients with mild to moderate COVID-19. And outside of hospitals, actually, with the Omicron variant. And I want to bring your attention back to this. They listed four drugs here: Paxlovid, Sotrovimab, Veklury, Remdesivir, and Molnupiravir. Of everything on this chart I just showed you, Paxlovid's at the top. This is a drug created by Pfizer. It's only had one study, 2,000 patients. The average cost is $700. If you look at Sotrovimab is down right above vitamin D. You'll see 41% and 46%. Sotrovimab is what's the second drug that they suggest. Look at that. Two studies with 1,400 cases, $2,100. Molnupiravir is four above Sotrovimab at 50% success rate. Three studies, 1,900 people, $700 a pop. I want you to just recognize these are the most expensive drugs on here, including remdesivir was the fourth drug. There are so many other things that are cheaper and more effective, and people should be referencing this. 3 days before the FDA says now you have to use remdesivir, Sotrovimab, Paxlovid, and these other expensive drug, molnupiravir. 3 days before that, the world needs to know this. The jury needs to know it. This drug that causes acute kidney failure, liver failure, and heart failure, it was just increased by the FDA January 21st. I'll read this to you. Fact sheet for healthcare providers. EUA, emergency use authorization of Veklury remdesivir for the treatment of coronavirus 2019 in pediatric patients weighing 3.5 kilograms. They are now authorizing remdesivir to be pumped into the veins of all newborns weighing 7 pounds or more and anyone in between. And they are PCR testing babies in hospitals as soon as they're born, looking to see if they test positive with a PCR test, and they will take them and inject them intravenously with remdesivir, a proven drug that kills heart cells called cardiomyocytes, liver failure, and kidney failure. I need to bring some things to the attention of the jury, the judge, and the world in relationship to this document. It states testing who are positive in hospitals or non-hospitals. So this is in and out of hospitals. What every person needs to know is on this emergency use authorization by the FDA for pediatrics only. First bullet point here, the parent, giver, and caregiver has the option to accept or refuse Veklury. Please pay attention to that. All parents, you have the right to refuse per the EUA. Third bullet point, information on available alternative treatments and the risk of the benefits of those alternatives have to be told by the healthcare professional. They have to tell you the alternative treatments that are available for your kid or your baby. I need to show you what's in the document, though. Look at this. It actually states, hold on, let me show you. Approved available alternatives. Look in the middle of the page. Approved and available alternatives. This is on page 10 of the same document. Notice it reads, there is no approved available alternative product for the treatment of COVID-19 in pediatric patients. Now, wait a minute. They just said at third bullet point here, the doctors and healthcare providers have to provide information on available alternative treatments. But later in the document, they tell you there is no other ones that are approved, only remdesivir. It actually states here what they have to do if they ever give you remdesivir and there's a side effect. Look at statement 7. It actually says within 7 calendar days, a healthcare provider has to actually publish on a U.S. FDA form titled 350, all serious adverse events reported in babies receiving remdesivir. The world needs to know this. What's the serious adverse events that could happen from remdesivir that they want you to report and are holding you liable for? Look here. Under number 8, look at the asterisk. Serious adverse events are defined as death, a life-threatening adverse event, inpatient hospitalization or prolonging of existing hospitalization, a congenital anomaly or birth defect, a persistent or significant incapacity or substantial disruption of the ability to conduct normal life functions. A medical, last one bullet point, a medical or surgical intervention to prevent death, a life-threatening event. All right, what else do you need to know? At the bottom of the screen, I want you guys to know why the EUA was given by the FDA for the use of remdesivir in babies. It says here at the bottom, FDA has issued this EUA requested by Gilead, the maker of remdesivir, and based on their data submitted. Okay, now I just want to bring something up here. Why aren't we having the other companies that make ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, budesonide? They need to approach the FDA and just ask for an EUA to be able to be allowed, because it looks like Gilead could do it. And based on their submitted data, I want to show you what the data is. It's in this document. So let's look at the data that Gilead gave to the FDA to say, you know what, we can use this in pediatric patients now. This is at 11.3. So all data for pediatric use. Look at this. The safety and effectiveness of Veklury, remdesivir, have not been established in pediatric patients weighing 3.5 kilograms to less than 40 kilograms. For those who are either bullet points, hospitalized or not hospitalized. So I'd like to know what data the FDA had. If it hasn't been proven safe and effective with the pediatric patients, what data did Gilead give you? When in fact, remdesivir is still proven to be the least effective and most dangerous of almost every one of these drugs that you see on this list. I confer to the jury to find out why are they actually using this drug and continue to use this drug when in fact it is proven to cause more mortality, death, and side effects than many more drugs.
Could you just bring up that slide again, because I think in the footprint it said it's being extrapolated to something from the information that we received from studies from the adults, but I mean these were negative. So
yeah, that's right. Here, I'll share it with you again. Yes, hold on. And what's amazing to me is all the documentation about remdesivir and its failed publications and studies. You can see it there on the screen. Use in this age group is based on extrapolation of pediatric efficacy from adequate and well-controlled studies in adults. And I am going to share something with you so the world can see this, because they need to see it. This is the NIH table 2F that I keep showing you. This was just updated December. Let's see if it'll pull up here for us. This is table 2F. I just need to show you and scroll through this. It lists here remdesivir approved for the FDA treatment of COVID-19 hospitalized patients. Approved by the FDA. I'm going to scroll through here so you can see the list. Interferon alpha now is added to it. Not approved. Interferon beta. Not approved. Interferon lambda. Not approved. Comnatinib ivermectin. Not approved. Natac, however you pronounce this one. Not approved. And then you come to the end. There is no other drugs the NIH and Anthony Fauci are saying are allowed or approved for treatment. Yet it discloses here that it causes acute renal failure. I don't know if you noticed this here, but this monitoring parameters, remdesivir, it says see remdesivir section for information on using remdesivir in people with renal insufficiency. the monitoring parameters here lists that it's okay that if we give someone remdesivir in America, you can actually watch the liver enzyme activities right here, ALT and AST elevations. They say if you see ALT going up like they found in the France study, in the French study, they pulled remdesivir when their liver ALT numbers went up 3 to 5 times normal. They considered that toxic and deadly. Do you know what America and the NIH says is acceptable levels of ALT elevations? It's in the remdesivir's EUA. They allow your liver toxicity enzymes to go up ALT to 10 times the normal range. That's acceptable. And for those of you who want to see it, I'll show it to you because it's in there and it's disgusting to me. Let's show you. I have so much documentation here, but I want to show it just so you can see it. Here we go. It's right here. I already found it. Okay. World needs to see. Why did it bother France and they pulled it off of there? Increased risk on page 7 of the EUA for remdesivir. Increased risk of transaminase elevations. And I want you to go below to the bottom. Look at the first bullet point at the bottom. It says right above there, perform liver laboratory testing in all patients before starting remdesivir and during treatment. First bullet point. Consider discontinuing remdesivir if ALT levels increase to greater than 10 times the upper limit of normal. I would like to know why our NIH is okay with intoxicating a liver that the French scientist doctors pulled the drug knowing that it was deadly and toxic to inflame a liver to have 3 to 5 times the normal levels of ALT, and they consider that life-threatening. Why does our NIH, Anthony Fauci, and these protocols, why are they okay giving this drug to them? Oh, and I need to show you the next one. Can I show you the next one? Right underneath this 10 times accepted level for ALT elevations, liver toxicity, it actually states here, I need to show you. Hold on. I want to know what I was going to show you. Sorry about that. All right. So here you'll see, though, right below it says risk of reduced antiviral activity with co-administered chloroquine phosphate or hydroxychloroquine sulfate. I need you to know. Oh, I know what I wanted to show you. Hold on. Let me show you. I have to show you. Oh, please. Give me just a second, jury. You got to see this. Right here. This is what I was trying to get to. All right. This says these things are required. Okay. Number 4, like you mentioned, I showed you a second ago, you have to perform hepatic laboratory testing in all patients before starting Veklury. Number 5, you have to determine prothrombin time in all patients before starting Veklury and monitor during treatment as clinically appropriate. I'm not sure if you guys know what prothrombin time is. But prothrombin time, by definition, this is a clotting factor for blood. If prothrombin time is going up, it means it's taking longer for your blood to clot and you will have internal bleeding. If prothrombin time is being shortened, that means you're actually getting blood clot issues. So this drug, they know there's 2 things. You have to check liver functions before and during treatment, supposedly, per the EUA. You have to determine blood clotting time before and during treatment. And I would like to know if everyone around the world is doing this at all. And I would demand that all healthcare professionals do this because this drug is proven to cause cardiovascular toxic effects, including, as we showed you in the Nature Medicine, they said thrombotic events, blood clotting events occur due to the virus. When in fact, remember, Gilead was allowed to participate in contributing their published side effects of the drug. This drug needs to be taken out of circulation. There's a lot more information on this drug, a lot more things that we have here, but this drug by far, I believe, has been used just like the sedative drugs, and this is not the only one. Remdesivir is targeting and killing the elderly. It's complicating issues of liver failure, kidney failure, and heart failure. But there are sedation drugs being used around the world, like midazolam, morphine, currently in America and in Canada. They're using drugs like this to intubate these people who are being forced into having multiple organ failure, requiring them to go onto a vent because they can't breathe. And these drugs are midazolam, morphine, lorazepam, Presidex. And these drugs suppress the nervous system's ability to control your ability to breathe. They are respiratory suppressive. They're also known to paralyze the central nervous system and stop the heart from beating. It is my opinion they're using these as euthanizing agents and protocols to speed up the actual death processes in hospitals. And they're targeting the elderly around the world and did from the beginning. And we actually absolutely see that they are now targeting the young and now all people. And if of interest, if you don't mind, can I show you one more thing? They are targeting the hearts of all these people with these drugs for sedation and with remdesivir as proven in those studies. There's one other thing I would love to show the world before it even comes up. I may not even be a part of it. But in the Circulation Journal, here we go. You just have to say, I believe there's an asserted attack on heart muscle using remdesivir, using spike proteins, and using the vaccines. You have to just see this because it goes right in long lines of what remdesivir has proven to do. The American Heart Association publishes a journal called Circulation in November 8th. You'll see the date right there. Originally published November 8th, 2021. It's titled mRNA COVID Vaccines Dramatically Increase Endothelial Inflammation Markers and Acute Coronary Syndrome Risk as Measured by the Pulse Cardiac Test. This is a warning. And this is what they found. At the bottom, at the time of this report, the changes to the heart persist for at least 2.5 months after the second dose of the mRNA vaccines. We conclude that the mRNA vaccines dramatically increase inflammation on the endothelium and the T cell infiltration of cardiac muscle and may account for the observations of increased thrombosis, blood clot disorders, cardiomyopathy, and other vascular events following the vaccine. This is a warning. I only bring this up not because this is the part of the jury trial where you're being taught about the side effects of the vaccines. You have to understand they are finding now that the targeted ingredients in the vaccines are targeting heart muscles, the blood clotting issues within the heart. They're causing strokes, heart attacks, and the American Heart Association is publishing this in November. This is a month after the Cardiovascular Toxicology Journal published that remdesivir causes thrombotic issues, cardiomyopathy, and death of heart cells. I believe there's an onslaught attack to create targeted drug therapies or poisons that are directly targeting the heart of individuals, innocent people around the world, and they are calling it COVID-19 deaths using falsified testing like PCR that we've already learned about here. And that is my argument. When in fact, we know there's currently 150 studies promoting that natural immunity and showing that natural immunity post-infections from COVID or anything else are actually showing robust and longer lasting immunity than any of the current vaccines that are actually being pushed on the public at large.
Can I ask if there's evidence of any conflict of interest or like financial interests involved of maybe Fauci in what's going on?
Yeah, so there was actually a meeting. I won't pull it up here. I can't pull it up here. But there's a meeting where Anthony Fauci met with 11 different people in discussing which drugs they were going to use as the solution for the pandemic. And this was in March. Peter Breggin did a great job in his book of noting this. In his book subtitled, We Are the Prey, Dr. Peter Breggin. There was a meeting, Anthony Fauci and 17 other representatives. 9 of them were in this meeting, and they all worked at Gilead Sciences. Isn't that amazing? That's who he chose as his group of individuals to select for remdesivir. So that's a great resource, 2,000 citations in his book about that. I also will tell you there is connections to Anthony Fauci, Gilead Sciences. I've already heard references in this trial today. People need to look into Gilead Sciences connections to Genentech and Roche and PacBio, who's creating these PCR tests. There's a lot of collusion behind a lot of what they've done from the beginning, and it's been orchestrated since 2014-15. It's a part of this entire pandemic. But yes, there's, and I will tell you, with Anthony Fauci and with the corporations that own Gilead, it's primarily owned by corporations such as Vanguard and BlackRock. There's tons of connections to Gilead, Anthony Fauci, and others. So the selection still, the support still of using remdesivir, in my mind, is still to target the hearts, livers, kidneys of individuals. They know it's toxic. The reason why I believe they are right now putting remdesivir as of January 21st with the EUA as the only drug authorized to be pumped into the veins of all children, and there's no other alternatives, is they need babies to start dying because February 15th was the FDA meeting that was supposed to be happening to vote to give these vaccines to newborns, to five-year-olds, the Pfizer shots. So I believe they are actually setting this up one step after another in lockstep to create more carnage, more death, more trauma, blaming it on a virus that, like this Omicron variant that is almost the common cold. And I would argue it actually is the common cold, personally. But they want to actually project that this is deadly, even in pediatric demographics, so they can sell parents, grandparents, that they need to get the vaccines as well. And that's the only reason why they would do it. I can't find any other reason why you would do it. Even when I showed you the mortality results document from C19early.com updated daily, you see remdesivir's effectiveness at actually preserving the lives of people with COVID-19. It's 19% from research studies worldwide. 2 years later, 19%. I would like to ask the jury, why are we still promoting this one and only drug? It's now actually authorized to be used in all nursing homes in America, by the way, outside of hospitals as of the January 24th FDA update. So just like midazolam morphine being used in the UK to kill innocent elderly people there, call it COVID-19, they are now setting the stage to do it here with a drug called remdesivir. And with the published documentation I gave you, there's no reason on the planet I would consider it safe to be given to the elderly. When in fact, right now, February 13th, 2022, there's less than 1% of the entire world that's gotten this virus and been infected with it who has died. Less than 1%. In the state of New York, we pulled CMS data with attorney Thomas Renz and his CMS whistleblowers. The entire state of New York alone, every Medicare patient who has received 5 days of remdesivir treatment for COVID-19 in the state of New York, the entire mortality rate is 26.9% of all of them died. When I say they're targeting the elderly, they know these drugs are going to be toxic to them. And so anyway, these numbers are disturbing. Why would you use a drug that's failed at this extent, continued on 2 years later, unless there's a attempt and a plan of genocide to then sell the massive amounts of public around the world that you need our vaccines, which are obviously failing. And you'll go into that further into the trial.
Is this an only prescription only drug, or can you use to, can you self administer this drug as well? And do people do that?
Remdesivir is only approved to be given. Yeah, remdesivir is only approved to be given intravenously, and it has to be done either by a hospital or somebody in a nursing home. Right, they administer it through an IV needle. It is not through a tablet now. It's also been approved to be used now at infusion centers that are outside of hospitals for outpatient, where they were using monoclonal antibodies like Regeneron that were very successful. They're now allowing remdesivir to be used in those facilities. Those are intravenous also.
Now, at the risk of making a fool of myself, is it a fair conclusion after looking at everything, all the evidence that we have heard tonight, including your own evidence, is it a fair conclusion to say that, one, we only have an illusion of a pandemic that was created by a faulty PCR test? Two, they're using this illusion in order to use drugs that kill people, which is then, three, the reason for making people believe that this is caused by the virus, the illusion, and then, four, use vaccines that are just as deadly as remdesivir and the other drugs.
The illusions, is absolutely the illusions. However, the corruption cannot be understated. Dr. Pierre Corey, he continues to say this is a nonstop, obvious, corrupt attempt to create death and harm. The PCR tests do not determine if you have SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19 or any respiratory virus for that matter. It's a faulty test, faulty cycle set up for it to create and exaggerate cases of COVID-19. In March of 2020, our CDC published documents to hospitals around the country. Thomas Renz filed a lawsuit. They actually said in March of 2020, all hospitals, if a patient comes in and you test them positive for influenza A or B, but they test negative for pneumonia and negative for the PCR test of COVID-19, this is in their own documents. If you'll look at the intake form and look at their home address, if it's in a city where in the media you have heard there are positive cases of COVID-19, you can call this case a positive COVID-19 case, document it as such, and we'll give you a 20% additional bonus for that diagnosis instead of the actually tested confirmed flu diagnosis. And then they did the same thing for pneumonia. So beginning March of 2020, they started incentivizing hospitals and clinicians to give diagnoses of COVID-19 that were false, even if they didn't test positive for PCR, and they incentivized them all to do it. So yes, it is an illusion orchestrated by our federal health agencies to exaggerate the cases of COVID, to exaggerate the causes of death from COVID, and they're calling them complications of COVID. And I would definitely call on as many plaintiffs as possible of loved ones who have died in hospitals around the world who were treated with remdesivir. I have actually encouraged, asked for, and have had and received thousands of these from around the world. And I asked them to look at their certificates, their death certificates. You will see they died of complications of COVID-19. They diagnosed secondly from acute kidney failure, and they died from complications of secondary COVID pneumonia. It is not secondary COVID pneumonia. When you shut down the kidneys and you put a IV bag flooding water into the veins of someone and they can't excrete the water from their kidneys you've shut down, you flood their abdomen with water. It then floods inside the heart, and then it infiltrates your lungs and you drown them to death. It's called pulmonary edema. So I call on everybody to drive as many of these people in to actually give this information. We know this is what the drugs do. Yes, there's an illusion that they're dying from a virus. They're being poisoned to death with ill-advised protocols. Absolutely. They're also being asked and incentivized to artificially exaggerate positive cases and give diagnoses for it. I just showed you that Medicare in America is incentivizing hospitals with a 20% bonus and the code if you'll just give us a positive COVID-19 diagnosis for all Medicare age patients. Really. And I would like to ask you, jury, judge, if, like I showed you on the NIH chart, that there's only one drug as of December 16th that's FDA approved for treating COVID-19 hospitalized patients, why is Medicare bribing all the hospitals to use that one and only drug if there's only one approved to be used anyway? Why would Medicare have to bribe them with a 20% bonus payout to use the one and only one? There can only be a nefarious reason behind why they're bribing all hospitals to use that one drug proven to cause acute kidney failure, liver failure, and heart failure. From the beginning, we knew that was the case. You have all been lied to.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah. Dr. Ardis, thank you so much for your evidence. I must say that you have put the jury in picture exactly as to what we are dealing with. And what we are dealing with is a textbook scenario when it comes to medical malpractice. And we see it not just only in the United States, but we see it in each and every country of the world. And having regard to this grand jury as well, you can quickly just tell us, or you can basically just say as to whether you confirm that each and every hospital, each and every medical doctor that prescribe remdesivir, that prescribe all the other medicine that you have mentioned, mendesalem as well also, yeah, if I actually pronounce that correctly, that they are practicing that malpractice, medical malpractice, without a shadow of a doubt. Will you agree with that? And that is basically in line with your statement and your evidence that you have just given, that you actually motivate each and every citizen, the jury in a matter of fact, throughout the world, that once they can get or they realize that those drugs has been prescribed, that they actually need to take the necessary action. So are we now really, and for me, based on the evidence that you have given, this is a textbook scenario of medical malpractice. And at the heart of this medical malpractice, without a shadow of a doubt, it is financial gain. And the parties that you've mentioned when it comes to financial gain is BlackRock, and I believe that all of the other investors as well also. So will you agree that, yes, we are now talking about a textbook scenario when it comes to this medicine that's being prescribed, and it is also then used at the same time to increase the statistics, and it is used at the same time as well also to inculcate or basically instill fear in the populace of the world. Will you agree with that?
Absolutely, 100%. I confirm that. Also, I would just like to say this is actually textbook eugenics.
I think you are absolutely right, because the thing is like when we look at intention, and you have made the intention quite clear, the way as to how you've actually taken the jury through each and every of the documentation, for me, it also comes down to eugenics. It comes down to clear a criminal intent. And I do not see as to how any of these culprits will be able to actually get off it itself. So thank you for making that clear. Thank you so much for your evidence. And thank you for taking the time, step by step, showing the jury, showing each and every citizen in the world as to what we are currently dealing with. Thank you, Dr. Addis.
You're very welcome. And I cannot say thank you enough to Dr. Renier Fulmick and your team. And thank you for all of you that are here for standing for humanity when so many obviously don't care and do not want to do the right thing. So thank you, every single one of you. It was my intent from the beginning to try to educate, warn, and inspire as many people as possible to what was going on. And you guys have done a great job of putting together a great group of people that I continue to call my colleagues and my friends. Thank you on behalf of humanity.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
We do care. All of us care. Before we now turn to Dr. Shankara Chetty, please, John O'Looney, I think this is even though it's extremely troubling, but I think this is the right time for you to explain what happened in the UK, because it sort of mirrors what Dr. Brian Ardis just told us. What happened in the UK, and how did you find out about it?
There you go.
Thanks.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Cool. So as a funeral director, initially, obviously, when COVID first appeared, I was convinced I had no reason not to be, and certainly wouldn't have suspected that it was going to be such a nefarious, plandemic is the word that's been used to describe it. There were a number of things that kind of raised the alarm for me. One was the death rate across 2020, despite the best efforts made during a period of March and April in care homes. There was no increase in death rate. There was, you know, we were seeing one thing on the news and we were being told about this deadly pandemic and people falling over left, right and center. And it just wasn't there. The death rate wasn't there. I was washing and dressing people that were alleged COVID victims throughout 2020. And it's very interesting to hear the doctor talk about the edema on the lungs, because when we embalm someone, the process is quite invasive. And there's an instrument called a trocar that's inserted into people, into their abdomen and into their lungs. And we were pulling loads of edema from patients who'd come into our care. And it was, you know, so obvious, like a yellow, clear fluid as we emptied the lungs kind of thing. They were consistently full. I also had a pandemic guy. He introduced himself as John. His name was John. He called me early in 2020. He told me he was a government-sponsored pandemic guy. He said that he would be calling all of the funeral directors in the local area, and his task was to collate COVID deaths and numbers. He asked me what my capacity as a funeral director was, how many deceased could I hold in my facility. He asked me how many deceased I'd collected that week and how many were COVID and where from. So it wasn't too long, virtually straight away, he started steering me. And by that, I mean, he would say, I would tell him, for example, I collected a gentleman from a care home. He had onset dementia. I've spoken to the family. He'd been in there 4 years. There were no doctor present at the time of his death. There was no COVID.